News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We are going to provide these people with a minimum for them to be able to live a dignified life. We are going to invest in skill development. We're going to invest in socio-economic integration of these people.
That was Rwandan Foreign Affairs Minister Vincent Biruta explaining plans for hosting illegal migrants from Britain in a controversial deal. Details coming up. Also, 11 soldiers and 15 gunmen have been killed in a suspected extremist attack in Burkina Faso. All these and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Officials have defended the controversial agreement under which Rwanda has agreed to accept asylum seekers from Britain, saying today that the first batch of 50 will arrive by the end of the month. Eugene Uimana has more details from Rwanda's capital, Kigali.
As three of five facilities that will host migrants and asylum seekers from the UK are unveiled, Rwanda's Foreign Affairs Minister Vincent Biruta said the two countries are doing a noble thing.
Those are stateless people who don't have any status in the UK, and we need to just decide to give our contribution to a solution to illegal migration. And we are going to provide these people with a minimum for them to be able to live a dignified life. We are going to invest in skill development. We are going to invest in socio-economic integration of these people.
The first three facilities are RLG $1 campaign complex, Desire Resorts Hotel and Hallmark Residences. They have beds, kitchens, gyms, swimming pools, TVs and other equipment that Rwanda says will help migrants feel at home. The Rwanda government says that after flying 6,000 miles to Rwanda, the migrants and asylum seekers will stay in the facilities for up to 5 years and will be allowed to apply for asylum and settle in Rwanda, among other options. Ale Mukularinda is the deputy government spokesperson. He emphasizes the facilities are not prisons and are designed according to the conditions of the migrants.
He says they are hosting them, not imprisoning them. They will have full right to travel. No one will stop them. He adds that they are expecting all categories of people, including families, singles and the elderly who managed to fly to the UK, and that is why they prepared different facilities to host them accordingly.
Rwanda says the exact day of their arrival is not yet known, but it will be by the end of this month. This is the implementation of the Rwanda-UK Migration and Economic Development Partnership that was signed on April 14 and sparked a lot of criticism. This is UK's Home Secretary Priti Patel.
We want to stop this vile trade, this inhumane trade, where criminal gangs and smugglers are just profiteering and making so much money and doing all sorts of inhumane things to people that are coming over in lorries and also in boats.
Patel was speaking at a news conference after inking the deal. The Rwandan government said it is confident that after the migrants arrive and improve their lives, critics will stop. It is referring to the previous action of hosting migrants who came from Libya to escape dire conditions and human trafficking. They live in eastern Rwanda and some have gotten permission to settle in Europe. Eugene Uimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Cameroon's National Day on May 20th has been marked by running battles between government troops and separatists who imposed a lockdown, crippling business in English-speaking western regions. The military says at least 28 separatists who vowed to disrupt celebrations in English-speaking regions of the majority Francophone nation were killed in violent battles. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, where President Paul Biya is attending commemorations.
Cameroon's military sings at a ceremony to commemorate May 20 in the capital Yaoundé, pledging loyalty to state institutions and expressing the readiness of troops to defend the country's territorial integrity. The government said The National Day celebration was successful in Cameroon's French-speaking regions. Separatists said they imposed a lockdown in English-speaking Western regions to protest May 20 celebrations, also known as the Day of National Unity between the English-speaking minority and the majority French-speaking nation. Capo Daniel is Deputy Defense Chief of the Ambazonia Defense Forces, which Cameroon officials call a leading separatist group. He says fighters stopped government troops from transporting French speakers to English-speaking Western regions to give the impression that English speakers are happy with the central government in Yaoundé. Capo says in the process, many government troops were killed.
Previously, we have seen the Cameroon government drive into our territory, her own citizens, to stage public celebration of the 20th May. For this year, 2022, we have targeted Cameroon forces, killing over 24 of them. Across Ambazonia, our forces have signaled their presence to our population by firing shots in the air to send a message that today everyone should stay at home and observe a rejection of the Cameroon union with Ambazonia.
Ambazonia is what separatists call the state they say they are fighting to create. The government has denied its troops were transporting French speakers to English-speaking regions. Colonel Samuel Talbot Orok is a commander of government troops fighting separatists in Bamenda, the capital of Cameroon's English-speaking northwest region.
Let the world, and Cameroon in particular, understand that the military in Bamenda know that the secessionist fighters will be doing everything in their powers to disrupt the successful 20th May celebration. That's why we are taking every single measure, as far as security is concerned, to make sure there is a hitch-free 20th May celebration in Bamenda.
The government said prior to the day, at least 35 people, separatists suspected of preparing to commemorate the day, were abducted by separatists in several towns of the southwest region, including Mutengene and Tiko. Bernard Okalia Bilai, the governor of the southwest region, spoke by telephone from Boya, capital of the region. Bilai says local administrative authorities and civilians report separatists who abduct and threaten to kill people accused of disrespecting lockdown calls to the military. He says civilians have understood that separatist claims that fighters can create an independent English-speaking state in Cameroon are unfounded. On May 20, 1972, Cameroon organized what it called a constitutional referendum, during which a majority of its citizens voted to abolish the federal system of government that had existed since 1961 in favor of a unitary state. Separatists say there has been an overbearing influence of French in English-speaking Western regions since the 1972 referendum. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
11 soldiers and 15 gunmen have been killed in a suspended extremist attack in eastern Burkina Faso, a complex attack with shells fired, followed by direct fire on the base, is how the army described the assault. French news agency AFP, quoting an army statement, said warplanes helped to neutralize at least 15 terrorists who were trying to escape after the attack. Last year, around 40 people, many of them civilian volunteers with the army, were killed in three suspected extremist attacks in the same regions. Burkina Faso has been battered by such raids since 2015 by movements linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group. More than 2,000 people have been killed and 1.8 million displaced. The new head of state, Lieutenant Colonel Paul Henri Sanda Ogodimba, says he has made the security crisis his priority. Namibia overthrew elected president Roch Marc Christian Kabore in January, accusing him of being ineffective in the face of extremist violence. After a relative lull when Namibia took power, a surge in attacks has claimed almost 200 lives. The combined impact of COVID-19 and increasing conflict situation is threatening progress in health and social services for women, children, and adolescents. It's also driving inequity and deepening the rift between rich and poor. Speaking at a virtual summit late Thursday, global leaders and health advocates cited what they say are unprecedented levels of humanitarian crisis, with the war in Ukraine being the latest in a succession of devastating conflicts. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama has the story.
Some health experts say more than 2 billion people, including half the world's poorest populations, currently live in humanitarian and fragile settings. The e-summit, dubbed Lives in the Balance, brought together government representatives, policymakers, healthcare providers, and community leaders. Together, they discussed the challenges affecting the health and well-being of women, children, and adolescents in the wake of increased instability across the world. It was the fourth in a series of Lives in the Balance e-summits launched in 2020 by PMNCH, the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health. Helen Clark is board chair at PMNCH and former Prime Minister of New Zealand.
Things have got worse for women and children and adolescents on the front lines. There are more conflicts. We've seen the devastating conflict in Tigray. And then, of course, over the last 3 months, the devastating war in Ukraine. So these are very, very tough times. Yet again, we're looking at record numbers of people around our world displaced. And most certainly, there's a record number of women, children, and adolescents in great need of assistance.
In addition to suffering from the direct impact of COVID-19, women and children, particularly in Africa, continue to experience disruptions to essential health and social services, as well as alarming rates of violence. Margaret Agama Anyete is the acting director of Health, Humanitarian Affairs and Social Development for the African Union.
The fact that the continent broadly is also unprepared and has weak preparedness systems in place to deal with many of these issues which result in humanitarian situations. And of course, we cannot forget the issue of climate change and climate-driven humanitarian situations.
As a result of the global recession, these vulnerable groups are also being pushed into poverty at an alarming rate. Ted Chaban is the global lead coordinator for COVID vaccine country readiness and delivery, launched in January by UNICEF, the World Health Organization, and the Vaccine Alliance, Gavi. Together, they work to deliver and expand access to vaccines for low-income countries. Chaban said he regrets that many people in fragile and humanitarian settings remain unprotected.
Among the countries with the lowest vaccination rates, we are starting to see diverging trends. Since January, the number of countries with vaccination rates at or below 10% has dropped from 34 to 18. Of the 18, 14 countries are facing humanitarian emergencies. This means that the world's most vulnerable people, including refugees and internally displaced, are likely to be vaccinated last, if at all.
Participants discussed the challenges faced in protecting the health and the well-being of women, children and adolescents, and the policies and financial investments required to provide services. Clarissa Regede is a youth leader and public health advocate for a grassroots health organization in Zimbabwe.
One thing that has come out is the importance of data. And as Youth Engage, we've taken it upon ourselves to go into the community and record the successes, how government is doing well, or how government is not doing well in terms of giving young people what they want, or adolescents and young women what they want. And we have a very thriving scorecard that we have implemented in over 139 clinics in Zimbabwe. I think COVID-19 came to derail all the things that had been put in place.
The United Nations Children's Agency said about 43% of global under five deaths in 2020 occurred in fragile and conflict-affected situations. The participants of the e-summit hope by working together to change that. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. And please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Visiting U.S. officials and Congress members have repeatedly urged Tunisian President Kais Saied to enact an inclusive political and economic reform process, but he has continued to impose a series of undemocratic moves. U.S. Acting Assistant State Secretary for Near Eastern Affairs Yael Lambert was in Tunis this week to discuss the U.S. commitment to support the Tunisian people and the need for diverse voices to play a role in mapping the country's future path. Khalid Chouket, former Tunisian Prime Minister, Tunisian Minister of Parliamentary Affairs, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
Personally, I have not been able to see any results for this visit or for the visit of all U.S. officials to Tunisia over the past 10 months. Whether it concerns members of Congress or senior officials in President Biden's administration and the U.S. State Department, as it seems that there is a problem in communicating with the President Kais Saied and his government, as the clear American messages seem incomprehensible to the Tunisian official side, or their content is rejected. In any case, there are no tangible results for these messages, whether for the comprehensive dialogue in which all Tunisian parties must participate in order to agree on requested reforms, or also the need to return to the democratic and constitutional track as soon as possible.
Thousands of Tunisians continue to protest against President Kais Saied, demanding a return to the normal democratic order and rejecting his replacement of the Judicial Council that guaranteed judges' independence, as well as independent electoral commission with ones he named himself. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said the United States is deeply concerned by the Tunisian president's decision to restructure the election authority in the country. What should the U.S. do when the Tunisian president takes undemocratic steps before or following U.S. official visits?
It seems to me personally that the interpretation of the phrase deeply concerned, which is used in the U.S. State Department's statements about the terrible conditions in Tunisia, does not have the same meaning for President Saied and his team as the meaning intended by U.S. officials. It is clear that this concern also does not bother the Tunisian president, but perhaps the phrase confirms the populist image that his supporters hold about him. That is, he is a man who is annoying the United States and opposes its policies and directives and does not listen to its messages. American officials are supposed to release this fact and draw their directions based on it. Just expressing concern seemed to be a kind of encouragement to President Saied to continue acquiring more powers and deepening the crisis of the democratic path and process in Tunisia.
Four opposition lawmakers from Tunisia's dissolved parliament were jailed on Tuesday by a military court, and their lawyer said the latest human rights abuses following President Kais Saied's seizure of power last year. What's your take on using military courts in trials of members of the dissolved parliament?
Referring civilians to military courts is a clear violation of international recognized human rights rules and a flagrant violation of the terms of fair trial. Not to mention that the convicts were people's representatives elected in free and transparent democratic elections. This trial implicates the Tunisian military establishment in the political conflict between President Kais Saied and his opponents, which is totally unacceptable. This institution is required to respect the constitution and be far from the political affairs.
That was Khalid Chouket, former Tunisian Minister of Parliamentary Affairs, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El Shenawi. In Zimbabwe, Mustash District in the eastern province of Manicaland is at the center of an outbreak of measles. So far, over 30 people have died and over 290 cases have been confirmed. Most of those affected are between 6 months and 15 years old. From Harare, Kudzaiza Nawashi has more.
Measles is a highly contagious, serious disease caused by a virus. Symptoms include a high fever, a runny nose, red and watery eyes, and a rash. If left untreated, the illness can spread and be deadly. Mutasa District Medical Officer Dr. Sifas Fonte has this update.
As of yesterday, we had recorded a total of 292 cases with 34 deaths. As of yesterday, end of day, we had vaccinated 70,817 KC children. Against a target of, I'm not aware of it off yet, but it's around 77,460. Our coverage now is at 91.4% in terms of the vaccination.
Authorities are confident they can reach herd immunity by reaching enough people. Some have been vaccinated and others have not.
In an outbreak, I think there is a high concentration of a disease than the usual normal. So those who have been vaccinated, truly they have developed immune system. But remember, when you vaccinated, people get different grades of immune system. But even as such, those who have been vaccinated, true, they're getting the disease, but they are not getting the severe form of disease, just a mild form. You see someone with just a rash, red eyes, or they're just coughing.
Fonte says it's similar to COVID-19 vaccinations, where the drugs do not necessarily stop people catching the illness, but minimizes the extent of their sickness. He adds the rollout of the vaccination drive has been encouraging.
When actually it was notified that we are in an outbreak, people should come to vaccination, we are actually overwhelmed with the people. I think the numbers are speaking for themselves. So the response in general has been overwhelming, though we still have challenges, especially with the guys from the apostolic faith who traditionally do not seek help from health facilities. They are now opening up, but we had a challenge in the beginning.
The rollout has been slower than the authorities expected. The problem has been linked to the huge presence of apostolic faith-based churches whose congregates do not subscribe to the idea of seeking medical aid from hospitals. Adding to this, Manicaland's mountainous landscape has made it difficult for authorities to reach all parts of the district within their planned timelines. But authorities say vaccinations should be completed within 2 weeks of an outbreak, and they are optimistic the outbreak can be contained. For VOA, this is Kudzaiza Nawashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abbaru, and our engineer, Patrick Deya, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.